Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Negler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Happy Tuesday. Happy 1 week until training camp eve. That's how I measure my life. Your mileage may vary. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a great afternoon. After the news of Devontae Wyatt's extension yesterday, all quiet on the Packers news front. But it did get me thinking, that extension for Devontae Wyatt, and the fact that we're sitting here now over 24 hours since the news broke, and we still have yet to see the details of the contract, which would suggest to me there's a decent chance that there are participation bonuses available here, some keeping themselves safe maneuvers by the Green Bay Packers, and that would be completely understandable after availability type things put into Jaden Reed's contract, Christian Watson's contract, and then offering a contract extension to a guy like Isaiah McDuffie, who has missed all of one game in his entirety of his time in Green Bay. Seems like availability is certainly top of mind when it comes to the decisions and some of the, let's call it a bit of a gamble that Brian Gutekunst has made when identifying his core guys and who he wants to keep around. But like I said, regarding those other contracts, you would think there are probably, you know, game day bonuses, things of that nature in Wyatt's deal for a player who's had a lot of misfortune when it comes to being able to play any length of time and any kind of stretch during his time in the league. This is a player who's played 400 or more defensive snaps in exactly one of his NFL seasons. And 400 is not a huge amount, right? Talk to Kenny Clark about that. They really obviously need him to stay on the field. And it is interesting when you pull back and you look at the way Gutekunst has operated this offseason. I've talked quite a bit about how clearly the plan from the jump once Aaron Rodgers was traded was to go super young, allow that youth to grow together, and then identify your core, keep it together, and go win the championship with your core group, right? And clearly, I think this offseason has played into that in a big way, right? Whether it's allowing guys like Quay Walker or Romeo Doubs to hit the market, knowing there's a really good chance they're not going to be back, to identifying these guys who you do consider to be your core players but have had some pretty significant issues when it comes to staying on the field. I know in other towns, other NFL cities, the general manager may have struck out a little bit more when it comes to free agency, maybe even working the trade market a little bit. Now, I know they brought in Zaire Franklin via trade. You know, I understand moves have been made, right? Especially while allowing a Quay Walker to walk out the door. But it is kind of fascinating to me to see the team stick with, okay, we're going to pay our own while attempting to protect ourselves, right? With all these, you know, playtime incentives, as it were, rather than, you know, okay, we are supposedly in this window where we should be swinging for a championship. We've traded for Micah Parsons, and yeah, it sucks he got hurt, but he'll be back at some point. And, you know, we are banking on quite a few guys who just have not been able to stay on the field with any regularity. Even you could point to handing a fifth-year option to Lucas Van Ness. And I know it makes financial sense. I get why the move was made. But even Van Ness has not been able to stay on the field with any regularity, especially coming off last year. But even when he's been healthy, he has not played a majority of the snaps. He has not been counted on to be on the field the way he will be in 2026. It's just interesting to me to kind of note that versus, you know, some of the more aggressive maybe ways that other general managers have operated. Not that anyone is right or wrong. It is just interesting to note the kind of a different approach, right? From Green Bay, definitely counting on availability from these core players who, when they've been on the field, have been extremely effective and have been very good for the Packers. Just have to hope that more often than not, they're able to answer the bell in a way they just really haven't consistently up until this point. It's a bit of a gamble from young Mr. Gutekunst, and I can call him that because he's younger than me, so it's all right. Hope you're all doing well. Good to see you all chatting it up. Chad's here. Of course, Chad's here. We can all start now. Chad's arrived. Jim, how are you, buddy? Benarak, always good to see you saying greetings. I know. Where the heck is Stu? That's a good question, Soder. Before we get going and get to your questions and comments, you guys know I got to give a shout out to our friends over at Ticket King. Ticket King is based in Wisconsin since 1992. Don't use Ticketmaster, StubHub, SeatGeek, none of these national companies. If you need Packers tickets, use the company based right across from Lambeau Field. And if you're not in Green Bay, no problem. Just use the Ticket King link in the description of this video or at cheeseheadtv.com. All right, folks, how we doing? We got a couple super chats already. What's up, E4? How you doing, man? Well, coach, players follow their assignments in a deep bench, Spain, and this season's Packers. I like the continuing meshing of the World Cup and the Green Bay Packers. I'm always down for that comparison. You will hope, as far as well coached goes, we will be seeing quite a new number of faces when camp kicks off next week on the defensive coaching staff. And there have been some significant turnovers there. Now, on the offensive side of things, we all know that has been pretty steady, though the Packers did lose Sean Mannion to the Eagles. But for the most part, it's a lot of familiar faces on that side of the ball that hopefully that continuity helps the Packers springboard early in the 2026 season. But yeah, well coached, definitely. Follow the assignments. Always good to have guys who are assignment sure. No question about it. Brian, how are you, man? I won't hear any Jordan Love slander. Well, then I would suggest you get off the internet, because golly howdy, there is a bunch of it on offer for you to hear. I mean, I hear you, man. Look, we've talked about it ad nauseum here on this channel. I'm sure you guys have consumed a ton of content all over the internet regarding Jordan Love, the lack of respect, what it's going to take for him to get the recognition he deserves. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The team needs to be more successful. He has played well. He is coming off his best year as a pro. Hopefully he keeps continuing to improve as he has so far throughout his time as a starter. But until the team is more successful, especially in the postseason, the slander will continue, sir, whether you listen to it or not. And I completely respect your position. I completely agree with it. But that's not going to change anything. The slander will continue until morale improves or something like that. Joe, how are you, buddy? I think the Packers have the depth to handle some injuries. Now, if they just don't lose arguably five of their top 10 players to season-ending injuries, that is a thing that I find kind of fascinating, where, you know, when people are looking at what the Packers did this offseason and then kind of trying to project forward from, okay, they've let these guys walk, or, you know, they traded away, say, Rashawn Gary, Colby Wooden, what have you. And now we're sitting here going, well, they lost five in a row at the end. Right. Without Micah Parsons, Zach Tom, Tucker Kraft, Devontae Wyatt, and then for stretches, Evan Williams is on top of that as well. Like, yeah, no kidding. Get some of those guys back, and I like their chances. You know, especially with the young ascending talent that they have on the roster that will be stepping in and be given more opportunities. Man, it's just, it is so past time to get on the field and start sorting this stuff out and have the Packers start winning some games and people be like, oh, that's right. The Green Bay Packers know what the fuck they're doing. Like, I can't wait for that moment, because it does happen seemingly every year where we go through the longest offseason and then we get back to training camp and hope is anew, and then we get to the games and the Packers actually win a couple and people are like, oh, right, they're pretty good. So wish we could fast forward through right to that moment, but we're going to have to watch the Packers do it, which is fine. I love watching the Packers win football games, so I got no issues with it. It's all good. Oh, man, Jim. You ain't wrong. Lloyd is due. I hope he tears it up, man. I mean, by tear it up, obviously you mean the defense, not anything else. Other than maybe the turf at Lambeau Field with his cleats as he's running past defenders. Because golly gee willikers, is it time for this kid to produce and contribute? I mean, do something, anything resembling contributing to the Green Bay Packers offense. The skill is undeniable. The talent is undeniable. He's just got to stay on the field. As you all know, what I am interested to see is if he does, let's say, get through the summer, right? Preseason is come and gone. We're getting ready for week one. How involved is he in the game plan, right? I know they're going to have a rotation and they're clearly going to be kind of, you know, counting the kind of reps that they always do when it comes to Jacobs and keeping him healthy and fresh and rotating in both Lloyd and Brooks. But if you are, you know, if you are Ben Searmans there on the sideline, deciding when guys need to go in, when Jacobs needs a blow, etc., how confident are you early in the season putting Marshawn Lloyd in there to do some heavy lifting? I would suspect we'll see a bit more of Brooks early on, especially. Now, if Lloyd can get through a few weeks, a few games, and put some nice stuff on tape and string a couple of solid performances together where he gets, say, a handful of carries and maybe one or two passing situations where he does a nice job recognizing the pressure and picking it up, etc., you know, there's a chance. Maybe he contributes long-term in 2026 and beyond. But, man, early in the season, I'm going to be fascinated to see how much he is utilized. And then, of course, this is all, you know, providing he makes it through camp unscathed, which is no given, as we all know. J-Rock, what's up, man? People say Love is great. Matt LaFleur is a run-first coach. Can you think of another team that has had a great QB and has a run-first offense? I mean, this is no slander to anyone. Well, I will say the one that really leaps to mind is one I mentioned a couple weeks ago, or I think it was last week, is John Elway in the last couple years of his career. You know, that was 100% a run-first offense. I'd also say it's interesting to see how Jordan Love continues to evolve as a passer under Matt LaFleur while utilizing the running game predominantly because it helps your quarterback. It's no different than whatever you think of Brock Purdy, but he has been successful in large part because Shanahan puts him in great situations. Now, he does great work, no question about it, but you know, Jordan Love has not been given a running game nearly as effective as the 49ers running game. But we've seen him improve all 3 years as a starter. And now the question is, and to your point, does Matt LaFleur feel comfortable enough maybe leaning into Jordan Love a little bit more in 2026? And I don't, you know, begrudge what his approach was last year, considering what he had to work with along the offensive line. You know, now you can look back at his time with Aaron Rodgers and how he turned Aaron's career around essentially after 2018, coming in 2019 and implementing a run heavy approach early on. And then the meshing of what Rodgers wanted to do with what he was comfortable with from McCarthy's years and meshing that with what LaFleur liked to do produced really good results, right? Obviously Aaron Rodgers won MVPs, but you know, Jordan Love is still coming into his fourth year as a starter, starting to approach his kind of prime, right? It's a lot easier to say, okay, Aaron, go throw it around the yard because you're a two-time MVP already, won a Super Bowl already quarterback. Like part of the, I would say, development of Jordan Love is Matt LaFleur becoming more and more comfortable with him. You know, and here's the other thing. You know, everything I just said, fine, you want to dismiss it, totally get it. All of the metrics, I mean all of them, indicate Jordan Love is a great quarterback. I mean, it's pick an advanced metric, EPA, protection, blitz, whatever, man coverage. Just go. Look, I highly recommend picking up the Aaron Schatz FTN Football Almanac. Excellent stuff in here, not just on Jordan, but just on the NFL in general. This is an outstanding read. I get it every summer. That's just one of a million different outlets that are pointing to the idea that, yeah, Jordan Love's really fucking good. And let's say borderline great. If you don't feel comfortable calling him a great quarterback, he's headed that way. Now, I think this year will be interesting, right? To see if Matt LaFleur does trust him a little bit more, run the offense through him instead of Josh Jacobs in the running game. You know, but hey, also, you can look at the Rams, you know. I understand they have Stafford, who, again, MVP, seen it all, done it all, end of his career, much like Rodgers was. But they also run the ball pretty damn effectively, which helps your quarterback, you know. I don't know, man. And plus, some of it is just LaFleur loves to run the fucking ball. I mean, Everywhere he's been, like, that has been his bread and butter and what he wants to do and kind of the core of his belief. I don't know if he even, you know, wakes up in the morning and thinks, man, I wish the forward pass had never been invented. It wouldn't surprise me. But, man, I understand what you're saying. Totally get it. But, again, it is, to my eyes, a process of the development of Jordan Love. And 2026 is another step. And I do think he's going to be, by the end of this season, considered a great quarterback. Miller Time, really appreciate becoming a Carry the G Club member. Thank you so much for the support. Hope you'll join us at Happy Hour, which this week is on Thursday. If you check the Carry the G on the community page here, posts, you'll see the information. Thursday at 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Lambeau time. Hope you'll be there. What else have we got? Harps. This is simple and direct. Go Pack Go. I like it. I like where your head's at. Keep it up. Will Collins. Thank you, sir. Which new assistant coach do you think makes the biggest impact? I think Babich will be great for the D. I think Babich is the headliner, right? The guy, now there are a few of them who have had coordinator experience coming in to the Packers staff. I really do hope that this whole staff on the defensive side of the ball gets this group to gel sooner rather than later. And I do think, hopefully, the fact that they have a lot of them have run their own defenses should help in that regard as far as how things fit, why you're doing what you're doing, how it all meshes together, you know, rush, coverage, etc. I do think Babich has a chance to be, you know, impactful in that regard. And then maybe, who knows, if the Packers do gel and produce well on the field, perhaps he's up for a defensive coordinator position again. That's the kind of downside, right? But I'll take it if it means the Packers defense is successful. Porkmaster, what's up, man? Haven't seen you in a while. The more I watch football, the less I know about football. End of year, I think we all need, all we need is a BC, and then the season comes and we're missing a D or E. Porkmaster, let me tell you, there is zero doubt in my mind that the more that, if you are in good faith trying to learn more about football, the deeper you go into the minutia of the game, the humbler you get and the more you understand how little you know on the outside looking in. You know, there was a great clip. I wish I'd seen who put it up. I think it was Coach Casey on Twitter. Sean McVay going through just, I believe it's just one running play, right? For look like a coach's clinic or what have you, but he's just highlighting, you know, this combo kind of block on the right side of the line and his tackle's footwork in concert with the block being made by the wide receiver who had motioned into the end line and had the option to, or is supposed to go back, but knew that there was a slot blitz. So he picks that up. And the way that the tackle's footwork worked with the interior combo block with the center and the guard, all of that working in concert to try and make a successful run play. And that's, well, I've just mentioned 3-4 positions, right? Like everything and the minutia that is involved that people are just completely unaware of. I think that's what makes football so damn interesting to me anyway, because to your point, the more I dive in, the more I look, especially when it comes to line play, the more you understand how very finite the technique stuff is that they're trying to work each and every down that to us on the outside looking in looks like chaos, right? It looks like guys just smashing into each other, but it is very much not that. Soder, what's going on, brother? Lombardi was a run first head coach with a super efficient passer. Pent up passer energy, likely why Bart let Dickie rip it. That's right. Star was like, you know what, Lynn, let me tell you something. Let me tell you about a coach who would never let me throw the ball. So I'm going to let you throw it all the time. Although, hey, to be fair, Bart called his own plays. Now, they knew that their bread was buttered with the running game, but, you know, Bart could have maybe slung it a little bit more if he wanted to, but he was wise. He knew how to move the ball. Like a champion, like a fucking champion. Raw. I don't know about this all across the board. I don't know about this as a blanket statement. You want to learn about your rivals? Listen to the fans, not the analyst narratives. They're horrible. I think it depends on which fans and which analysts. It's like when everybody always talks about is so-and-so overrated, I always say it depends on who's doing the rating, right? I think fans can see things at a level, certainly, that if you're talking about someone who covers the league as all 32 teams, sure, yeah, they'll probably have a better understanding of the inner workings, where some of the problems may reside, etc. But let's not pretend that every fan knows what the fuck they're looking at or talking about. And the fact that sometimes we get a little blinded to whatever we're looking at when it comes to our favorite team in comparison to the other 31 teams in the league. Like, man, I talked about this yesterday. There are fans who are convinced that the Packers are going to suck. They are going to win five games this year. And I hear this every offseason. So I don't know if, like, listen to the fans is the straightest way to get that info that you're looking for. But I hear what you're saying, and certainly there's an element to it depending on who those fans are, I would say. Pac Daddy, how are you, man? Thanks for the super chat. Brewers have the best record in baseball. Bucks rookies looking good, yet I'm still yearning for football. Random Packer, Al Del Greco. Specialists up in here. Yeah, man, how about those Brewers? Oh, I mean, how about Freddie? That was rough. That was hard to watch last night. But hey, I'll take it if the Brewers have the best record in baseball. Trying not to get out ahead of my skis, though. You know, we had a 14-game winning streak last year, best record in baseball, and essentially could do absolutely nothing against the eventual World Series champions. So, just one game at a time. Like Mark said, passion and community and family through the summer, whatever he said. That's where I am at with the Brewers, and right now it's a lot of fun to watch them. And that's fine. That's good. But I'm with you also. Just give me the football season. That's all I need right now. Charlie, fair question. Are you surprised by the Wyatt contract timing? I can't really say one way or the other until we get the details, but I suspect if the details are what I think they're going to be, not really. Again, I think there's going to be playtime protections there, so to speak. And essentially, you know, he was already on the fifth-year option. This gives Wyatt, I suspect, one more year of security until there's another inflection point where they will most likely either extend him yet again or they'll release him. Because I would be absolutely shocked if he plays the third year of this deal. So, yeah, the timing, no, not really. And I think it speaks to their confidence in how he's looked all throughout the offseason and that he'll be ready to go once things kick off in week one, or that he'll at least be able to contribute early in the season. And you look at what he's able to do when he's on the field, because that's the other thing. It's like, I know it's frustrating because he does get injured quite a bit, but when he plays, he's really fucking good. And that's not projection. That's not, oh, he could be good. Oh, he's teased us a bunch. No. The last 2 years in particular, when he's been on the actual field, he has been a really good player. And the numbers back that up, right? Tape is there, but the numbers are there as well. He's been a really good player. And I understand that's a scarce commodity in the NFL, a good interior defensive tackle. You want those guys locked up sooner rather than later. And here's the other component there. If he does stay on the field and plays just at the level he's played at, is like he was playing at last season, say, no improvement at all, but he plays 17 games, right? Comparative to his peers, what he's making and where the market is undoubtedly heading, especially next offseason, another rise of the salary cap, another round of defensive tackles getting paid, it is going to look like an absolute steal if he plays a season. And that's, to me, that's just smart ball. So, yeah, I can't say I'm shocked or surprised. You know, Packers, as they want to do usually, is get out ahead of it when it comes to signing their own. So, yeah, I don't think it's all that surprising. All right, everybody, I'm going to have to get going. Cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. As I said earlier, happy hour is Thursday night, not tonight, Thursday night this week. The information for happy hour is on your respective pages. In the meantime, please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV. We are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.